This week on The Chirp with Darren Millard, two of my favorite people. One's a Hockey Hall of Famer, the other one's not. Gary Lawless, who I work with every day, and Paul Coffey, who has won multiple Stanley Cups and is just pure gold. It's a whole bunch of fun on The Chirp with Darren Millard in Vegas.
Boys, I'm Mike today. Just let everyone know, don't say anything stupid.
Really growing on me, Stammer. Really starting to grow on me.
We are recording this from Fanfare in Vegas at the 2022 NHL All-Star Game. It is Sunday afternoon as I speak right now, and I can say that you can tell the difference between who's a local and who's here for the NHL All-Star Game and leaving town. Because the locals are spry. They got things going on. It's just another day in Vegas. The tourists, oh, their faces are long, and they're shuffling their feet, and they're saying, Vegas took a bite out of me. It's awesome. We had a great time here in Vegas hosting the NHL All-Star Game, and one of my favorite cool dudes who I got to know after his playing career, when I really got to know him, when we twirl around to playing some pickup hockey, Paul Coffey. Can you say that? I just played pickup hockey with Paul Coffey, and when you talk about his career, you go back to the Edmonton Oilers and then the stops along the way and playing in some significant games, including Canada Cups. Paul Coffey is a Norris Trophy winning Hall of Fame Stanley Cup champion defenseman, and the best part about him is he can bring it in a chirp fest. It's Paul Coffey on The Chirp with Darren Millard. What are you doing?
Me?
Yeah. Like, seriously, what are you doing?
In Vegas or general?
Just in general.
I'm doing lots. Busy. Do some work with the Oilers. Started a waste management company 3 years ago. Mm-hmm. We're from Quebec to Kelowna, looking to get down here in the States. It's going real well. And with the same group of guys, we've got a nice little software company as well. Still have the Kia store, coin wash and public storage beside it. And a wife and three kids, so life is busy. It's good.
I just wanted to know if you were playing hockey. I didn't know about all this other stuff.
Hey, you asked. I should get on the skates, but no, it's too hard. Do you think you could still play until you get on there once and do one lap and you go, ugh.
Why is hockey shape so different than regular shape?
It just is, whether you're a player or not. I mean, back when I was competing and playing, I mean, if you got 3 days off for whatever reason or 2 days off and then you went on the ice, you felt like you've never been on before. I mean, You know that. You were a goalie, though, weren't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, you guys, that's because you couldn't skate. That's why they put you in net.
Totally couldn't skate. Can't skate forwards anyway.
No, the beauty, it's such a cardio sport. And you can be in the gym and do all the leg stuff and do all the stuff these guys are doing, which is great. But if you don't get on that bike and get your wind going, it's not the same.
Nobody had more fun playing than you, whether you were playing pickup. Because we'd go out on those skates with Eric Lindros when he'd get the ice. Remember how mad he'd get because you'd bring out like Barney or Jim Cuddy and you'd bring out just random people and he would get so mad because he wanted to have a legitimate skate?
He could, boy, what a great human being, great hockey player, but just couldn't turn it off.
I know he couldn't. Not at all.
I don't skate with him anymore because we do drills out there. I said, Eric, I did drills for 30 years. 20 pro and 10 other. I'm not doing drills. Drop the puck. Let's go. And so there's an offside. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right? No, he's pretty intense when he gets out there, which I have zero time for.
I stopped the puck one time when we were playing just pickup hockey, and you went down and scored, and you skated by me and said that's how Fierzy got 14 assists one year.
14 or 15, that's right. Fierzy's tapping behind the net, and he always call out, go get me one.
Did you ever get yelled at because you shot in a 2-on-1 with Gretz?
Did I shoot on 2-on-1 with him?
I don't know. I'm sure you had a 2-on-1 that you shot at some point with Gretz.
No, I enjoyed looking him off, but the problem with doing that is he wouldn't pass to you. And he had the puck more than I did, so it never worked. Never worked.
When did you really appreciate those years? How long after? Or were going through Hartford and Detroit, and did you appreciate those years?
No, I always loved them. I mean, people ask me now, I mean, played on quite a few hockey teams, and which one did you enjoy the most? And, like, honestly, every single place, I took something out of it, whether it be playing with different guys or just being positive, like, kid. But, I mean, Edmonton was special. Pittsburgh was special. I love Detroit as well, but... We look back on those Oilers years, and you know, 7 Hall of Famers and a coach off that team was pretty... pretty special. We always say, boy, we should have more fun, but I think we did. we were one of those teams that could do both. We worked extremely hard on the ice. Our practices, you know, were legendary because of the speed of them, and we had fun off the ice too, which made the winning even that more special.
People say you should have had more fun. Like, that's all I saw from you guys was fun.
Yeah, no, that's what I say. But you sit back and you look and you go, man, we should have had more fun because we were that good. But no, we enjoyed it. We had a group of characters. I mean, when you have your best player, the best player in the game, is your hardest worker, it's pretty hard not to work. And then you got Wayne doing his thing every single night, and Mark wanting to be as good, so his line was driven every night. And you know, the defense, there was only six of us back then, prior to having Smitty and Book and Craig Muni come in. But there were six of us, myself, Huddy, Kevin Lowe, Lee Fogle, and Donnie Jackson, and Randy Gregg, and we competed hard against each other, too. And I think that's what made that group so special.
Who is wound the tightest on that team? And who is the most casual?
Well, Quinny Anderson was pretty casual. Glenn Anderson used to, I mean, we didn't have any rules back then. The only rule was be on ice on time, be on the bus on time, and don't miss any plane rides, which we did.
You didn't have a curfew?
Only when you lose.
Really?
Yes, we didn't lose
you
too much.
You didn't have a lot of curfews. No.
I was telling Glenn Sather yesterday at the game that, you know, my years in Edmonton, I don't think we lost a game in New York because we didn't want a curfew. You know, Slots was pretty good. He let us somewhat police ourselves. Yeah, we had curfews once in a while, but we didn't really need to be told why we had a curfew. There was a big game coming up. Mm-hmm. You know, and some guys, we used to call it playing guilty, and some guys could play guilty pretty damn good. You know, go out, and as long as you came to the rink ready to play, and it was all good.
So was Mess the guy that was the most intense? We've heard about it, but we don't know it quite like you do.
Yeah, I mean, Mark could do it all. I mean, he could play incredibly well. He could play any style you wanted, i.e. score, knock you over, fight you if he had to. But he could go off the ice, too. I mean, Mark had fun. You know, he was, I always tell the story, if he had $1,000 in his pocket at the bar, it was everybody's. But if he had no money in his pocket, he spent like he had $1,000. So everybody else had to pay for him, but no. Mark was special. I mean, listen, he took on, I guess, more of a leadership role after Wayne left. And, of course, what he did in New York was pretty special. But, you know, to answer your first question, who was the tightest, strong, the most serious? I mean, that would be undoubtedly Lee Foglin. He was our consummate mentor, professional, did everything the right way. All you had to do was watch his work ethic, whether it be stretching, which none of us did, working out hard on the ice. And, you know, Fogie brought it to the rink every single day, and it rubbed off on every one of us as well.
You worked out a little bit off ice, didn't you?
Yeah, but I never stretch.
Never stretch?
No. I still don't. It's the easiest thing to do, and I never do it. We used to have a rule that Slots would say, okay, come on, let's do a team stretch, and Smink would stand up and just kind of yawn. That would be his stress. But no, you didn't do that back then. You didn't even have to be at the rink at a certain time. You just had to be on the ice on time.
Do you think players today are a little too into that? Or is it just part of the evolution?
Yeah, it's just part of it. I mean, I think that they possibly, if I could comment on that, I guess there's no such thing as training that hard, but I think they train a little bit too hard. Because you see a lot of guys that, you know, there's Gary Roberts and Matty Nichol and a lot of guys that are great, great trainers with these kids. And but they still get hurt. They still get hurt. They can do the best training. Well, I think they should take a little bit more time off and let their bodies rest and not, and maybe put a little bit of weight on too. You know, they all look like they're male models, which is great. But, I mean, you need to have a little bulk to you.
Yeah, like us.
Yeah, look at us sitting here.
We could be male
models.
You look
good. You look good.
I wear dark clothes, flat collars, and nobody can see any ripples.
No. Today's athlete. Listen, these hockey guys, it's pretty incredible.
I guess. Do you think Connor works too hard? Like
what's too hard?
I don't know.
Yeah, what's too hard, and who am I to say? But they there's no time off at the end of the year. I mean, I don't think you need to be skating in June. But again, that's the way it is, and the guys are good at it, and they. But they're all, They all work out together. They're all friends now. That's one thing that's different too.
Right.
We didn't. You just didn't like the guy you played against. You might say hi to him at the end of the game, maybe, if you met him in a dark corner of the rink and your coach didn't see you. But no, these guys are all friends because they all work out together, which isn't good, bad, or indifferent. Just the way it is.
How long would you have lasted with Robs or Matty Nichol?
I don't like to be told what to do, so I wouldn't have lasted. I wouldn't have lasted too long. But I did say to Matty Nichol, I mean, he's great, and Gary's, you know, Gary trains like he played. He's probably, I played with him for a short period of time. He's probably the most intense guy I've ever played with. And that's
in men's league, too.
Oh, yeah. And it doesn't matter against who.
Right.
He'd fight his brother for a puck in a men's league.
Were you there the day that he and Ty got into it in that one skate, and Ty ended up being cut, and Rob ended up being cut?
It doesn't surprise me. But they didn't he go at it with Chris Draper in the outdoor game, too, in Detroit? I was there then, yeah. Now, Rob's is, listen, Gary Rob's is legendary, great hockey player, great trainer, but he has... There's no switch there. Mm-hmm. Those skates go on. Look out. Rob's is great. That's what made him special.
Where'd you guys go out in New York when you guys won and there was no curfew?
It wasn't like a Winnipeg, like the Marble Club or Palominos or something like that. There was always different places to go, but we always had a beer or two or ten at the bar underneath the rink. The Irish bar at Madison Square. Always as a team, that's where we met.
Really?
And then guys would disperse. Some guys would go eat. But nobody really ate back then. We didn't have dinner after the game. I mean, who's got time to eat?
Right.
Still got stuff going on, right?
Sights to see.
Yeah, sights to see.
Places to visit.
Plus, if you eat too much, then you don't feel like drinking. Yeah. Having a cold beer and doing team stuff, right?
Yeah.
But, yeah, New York was a great city, but I can't. You know, we've been to... I guess China Club, Studio 54, things like that. Yeah, we popped into there once in a while in the 80s for sure.
What was the best road city? Was it New York? Because as we record this, we're in Vegas.
Well, the two, Montreal, and I like Vancouver too. Vancouver was great.
But Roxy?
Roxy, yeah. Live bands a little bit. But if you talk to visiting players, they love the West Coast. Calgary, Edmonton, you know, back in the days when you could go out and have some fun and really do some solid team guys. I mean, guys like to come to the Western Canadian cities, Winnipeg too.
Yeah, Marble Club was, you mentioned that, and the Palomino.
Yeah, Toronto closed too early. Mikey Bolt's in the house.
Oh, it is. Keeper of the Cup.
You know, Toronto is what city that closed too early. Chicago was pretty good, but hey, Montreal, you can't beat Montreal. The best.
Hey, you coached a couple of years ago at the Spengler Cup.
Yep.
I thought that might get you going to coach full time. I know you've done some minor hockey and you've been right into that and had some great success and you're working with the Edmonton Oilers. I thought that might get you behind an NHL bench.
No interest. Not because I'm the type of guy, if I'm going to do something, I'm going to be all in. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have the time to do that with other things I got going on. But I'll tell you what, the Spangler Cup was unbelievable. I'll tell you who's a great coach that I have no idea why he's not coaching is Craig McTavish. Mac T was unbelievable out there. Prepared and not taking 10 or 12 hours a day to prepare himself. Prepared quick, spoke great, got to the point, got his players to play, and just said to me, you worry about the defenseman, I got the rest of it, and it was really enjoyable. He's a good coach, really good coach.
I like him a lot. Love my
conversation. And we had Mish here. With,
yeah, Mish Donskoff.
Yeah, he was unbelievable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's a big fan of yours.
I just told him, I'll follow you. Show me what to do. He says, we're going to watch film today. I said, on what? I said, I'll get these guys going. I don't need film. I don't need to bore them.
So what's the philosophy then? Like, Paul Coffey on working with defensemen.
I told the players that I don't care what you've done 4 days prior to this tournament or what you're doing in 4 days. I need your focus for 4 days, and that's it. And if you play, you're going to play. If you don't play, you're not going to play. Kidding. I mean, I played them all, empowered every one of them, and just they were incredible. They were an easy, easy group to coach. And, you know, you sit there and you watch it at that level, and those guys are all quality players. Some of them played a little bit in the NHL. And then you're thinking, man, those NHL players got to be that much better than these guys because they were good. Mm-hmm. They were good. It's a different game over there, but they could all skate. They could all move the puck. Gave them, I think, anyway, a few tips here and there. But they were an easy group to coach. because they wanted to win. Anybody gets a chance to represent your company or your country, and it was real enjoyable. I loved it.
Where do you keep your Norris trophies?
I got everything at home. My wife's got a nice little trophy office type thing with the cups and the Norris and all those things on one wall, and then the other wall is all my kids' accomplishments. And they had pretty good careers growing up, mm-hmm. so they have more trophies than me, but they don't have the big ones.
No,
they won't get them either.
Do you have all your cups in one little spot?
Yep. Stanley Cups, Norris trophies, Canada Cups, the Prince of Wales, Patrick trophies, all those kind of things. Yeah.
What about your jerseys? Do you have a jersey from every team?
My house ain't big enough. The room's not big enough. I do. Yeah. I mean, I love the Whaler jersey.
I do too.
I love the old school. I mean, Detroit, the red Detroit jersey is as good as it gets, in my mind. I like the old jerseys. Yeah, I got them all, but not out, not hanging or anything. Canada Cup jersey, I have one of those, but that's probably it.
If you play one game, is it number 7 or 77?
I don't know. I guess if it was with the Oilers, it'd be 7. But that's an interesting story, because when I held out in 87, we'd won the Canada Cup and had a little bit of a brouhaha with the Oilers that year. And then we went to Canada Cup, and then we had a week off, and then I was going to show up at training camp, and then had a bit of a conversation with our coach GM at the time. And it didn't go really well. So
no.
And it just progressively got worse. Anyway, so I went.
Was that a one-on-one conversation, or was that through your agent?
No, I always liked it firsthand. Mm-hmm. Some of it came through Gus, but I always liked it from the horse's mouth. If there's a problem, there was never a problem with me or the way I played. There was just different things, and I don't know how at 25 years old I guessed what was going to happen, but I could see it. You know, the previous year Lee Fogelman got traded. All he wanted to do was retire in Edmonton Oilers, and it just woke me up. But I was the greedy one, I was the bad one, and guess what? The next year Wayne got sold, so I guess I wasn't that dumb. But anyway, I went to Pittsburgh, and Roddy Buskus was wearing 7 at the time. Asked me if I wanted it. I said, no, that's your number. I had wore 77 the previous Canada Cup, so I just took 77.
Roddy lives in Vegas.
Yeah, he's a pilot.
Yeah.
I know. Roddy's a good man.
Awesome dude.
Roddy, he does live in Vegas. I got to call him. I got his number. Roddy Buskus. He's a good guy. I think he's Medicine Hat or Lethbridge or somewhere. Medicine Hat, I think.
Yeah. You got my number. You never call me.
Well, you just text me all the time to come on your show.
I do. This is the first time you've been on the show.
I know, but you text me all the time and I never answer back.
No, but I've never asked you to come on the show. I just like touching base with you.
I love it. Well, you're one of the good guys. Most media guys are, but there's a lot that aren't. But you're one of the good guys, and you're well respected in your field, and that's good stuff.
I don't want anything from you. I just like hanging out with you.
Okay,
so Badali.
Now I know that, so I'll get back to you.
Badali.
I always thought you wanted something.
No, just like want to hang out.
Now I know.
Tell me about your agent.
Gus Baby turned 85 years old. I had him over for dinner.
Can I just say he's one of my top 10 favorite human beings on the planet?
Gus hasn't got a bad bone in his body. Mm-hmm. He's almost too nice to a fault. Mm-hmm. And when you consider the business he was in and the success he had, and the Gretzky, Lemieux, Yzerman, Stevens, late great Dale Hawerchuk, myself, Scotty Stevens, he had the best of the best. Mm-hmm. And incredible man. 85 years old, sharp as a tack, looks great. Mm-hmm. So I said, have him over for dinner the other day. He ate steak and record time as usual, but he's sharp. He's great. He had a bit of a scare about 4 years ago, but
yeah,
he's doing great. It looks incredible.
So did he just kill him with kindness when he would go into negotiations? Because I can't imagine him getting into a real tense negotiation.
No, and that was, Gus was too honest, and that's a tough gig to be in if you're too honest. I remember when I was holding out. We had talked to a bunch of different teams, and I was going to be traded here, traded there, and it never happened. Then the last, just before, there was a rumor I was going to go to Detroit, and then Minnesota, St. Louis, Chicago came in, and Gus said they're interested. So I kind of, whatever I wanted money-wise, I bumped it up. And Gus goes, well, we can't do that. I said, I've been waiting, holding out 2 months. I said, we're going to do it that way. But I didn't want to go there, but I'll go there if they're going to pay me more. And he didn't believe in that because that's just how honest Gus is. Mm-hmm. But I'm like, no. He was...
How's his golf game? He's a golf ball. Loved playing golf.
He's terrible.
Yeah.
No. He's good. Gus is
passionate about the game.
Oh, he loves it. He hasn't... He could do 9 holes now. Like, he's 85 mm-hmm. years old. Mm-hmm. But a good-looking, sharp 85-year-old. And, he's good pals with our other buddy, Roddy Black. Mm-hmm. Blackie's probably one of his best friends, myself, him, my buddy Joe. And, yeah, Gus is passionate about everything. He was close to coming this weekend.
Was he?
No.
Oh, that would have been great to see him.
Real close.
Say hi to him, please.
He's been working on COVID. He's been practicing COVID for 20 years, though, because he doesn't come out very often. I said, you've been working on this for a long time. You're good at it. Sitting on your couch. I will say hi to him. He'll love that.
Cale Makar, what do you think of him? Do you get asked about him a lot?
A little bit. Mm-hmm. Lately,
who do you get asked about the most?
Well, Makar. But, I mean, there's always been, whether it be Mike Green, whether it be Erickson in San Jose, when they had kind of good years. Mm-hmm. And I'd obviously always say good things about them. But I said, I need to see it next year. I need to see it the year after. And it kind of never happened. But those guys don't do disrespect. Mm-hmm. But with a guy like Makar, I see him getting better, obviously, every game, but every year. The sky's the limit for him. I don't think he gets enough credit for his head. Like, he thinks the game. Like, yeah. I watch him out there. And, you know, when he made that spin around in random room on the Dak kid that's in Chicago.
Yeah, the overtime game.
In overtime. Yeah. And my kid's phoning me, Dad, you got to see this. Oh, unbelievable. And I looked at it and I said, Blake, who loves him, he's a defenseman, a right-hander as well. I said, what do you think Cale was doing there? What's the most important thing he did? He goes, well, you know, that is edges. I said, other than that, everybody says the edges. I said, I'll guarantee you, he knew who he was against. He knew it was a forward. A defenseman, you probably wouldn't have been able to do that because he would have been thinking that way. But he knew he was playing against a forward. He knew that Dak was a right-hand shot, which goes this way, so he spun that way, so the guy can't get around to defend. I truly believe that his hockey sense is as good as anybody, forward or defense. He's just that smart a player. And, hey, listen, I'm a fan of the game. I love the game. I love when players are good. I love when they show me something. I go to games, Toronto games. I just want to be entertained. I want to see the best players be the best players. It's hard to be the best every night, but just get out there and give it. And I think a guy like Makar, you know, sky's the limit. He's got a great coach, Jared, that lets him play. A lot of guys, when you get a guy with incredible talent like that, they might not let him play. They might put the leash on him a little bit, but I know it helps having your boss being Joe Sakic, who is one of the greatest offensive players to ever play. And the kid's good, but he's humble. I've never met him, but I just listen to him and watch him and read some quotes his dad said. So he comes from good, loyal, good, humble stock, and Western Canada boy. Mm-hmm. I did an interview the other day on him and talked to the guy, and he said, so he's an Oilers fan or Calgary? The guy says Calgary. I said, I don't blame him. He's from Calgary. Why wouldn't he be, right?
Yeah.
No, he's the real deal. He's a guy that you can see going to get better every year, wants to get better every year, and will produce.
Can he defend enough?
Can he defend enough? Mm. Oh, yeah. But, I mean, the guy, he's got the puck half the time.
Right.
I watched him yesterday. There wasn't a 2-on-1, and that was a 2-on-1 game, as we know. Just a outman rushes the whole day. He never got beat. Never got beat. Just very patient with a stick. He he can defend. You don't want him to defend. You want him to have the puck on a stick. You want him going the other way. But when the puck, he's a big boy. When the puck gets in his end, yeah, he knows what he's doing.
I watch Pietrangelo every night. I watch Hedman. More 200-foot, less flashy guys. But, or you like the flashy guys?
No, I like, listen, Alex is a great player. I liked him in St. Louis. I don't get a lot of Vegas games, but when I do, of course, I notice him out there. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize he was that big.
Yeah.
I saw him the other day, and I went, whoa. I mean, I know Hedman's big. And I've got a lot of respect for Hedman. Because he respects me. He respects the players before him. And I think that is really, really important.
Can you tell me that story? How do you know that?
Well, he just, he came out of nowhere the other day. I happened to go in the dressing room with Frosty, the trainer for the jersey, and he just came out of nowhere and said hi. And that's the second time I met him. It's just nice. I mean, I would go out of my way if I saw Gordie Howe or Bobby Orr or anybody back in our day. I don't go looking for it. It's just nice. And I actually spoke to John Cooper this morning. Wayne was playing golf with him and Sean Payton. I commented on Sean. I said, "What an actor! Have you seen that thing on TV? The
yes,
show?"
Yes.
I said, "You put a little weight on, but you look good." But I said to Coop, "I said, you know, I saw Heaven the other day. What a great kid!" And he says, "He's a Swede. Swedes are just nice people. Mm-hmm. But he's just a real respectful kid. I'm not saying the other guys aren't. Of course they are. Mm-hmm. But that's Heaven will be a Norris Trophy guy every year. Will he win it? Who knows? But he's always going to be in the conversation as long as he plays.
He's only won one. He's been a finalist 5 years in a row.
Yeah, I find that hard to believe. No disrespect to Fox and these other guys, but now you got Makar coming up. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, Hedman's always going to be in the running, but Makar is, I mean, that guy could, he's going to be hanging on to it.
How many should you have won?
Three.
Yeah?
I won three.
Yeah, but should you have won more?
Well, that's not for me to say because I had 100 points a couple of times and guys with a lot less, but that's no disrespect to, you know, I think it was...
Like Prong said he should have won more than two because...
Who said that?
Prongs.
Yeah.
Chris Pronger. And
yeah.
I call him Prongs because we're tight.
Yeah, sure.
Just like I call you Koff.
Sure.
He said he should have won more, but he had the relationship with the media that cost him.
I like Chris Pronger a lot, but that's weak. I'm sorry. Chris Pronger, listen, he's a great defenseman, but I don't think he's got a bad, I don't know, does he have a bad relationship with the media?
Well, there's a lot of back and forth. Adversarial.
That's because he has fun with it.
Yes, exactly. I think some media took that very personally.
The kid's a personality. I mean,
yeah. I love him. He's a Hart, but as a Hart Trophy, his argument was he's a Hart Trophy winner, and he only won two Best Defenseman Awards.
Okay, well, let's talk about who won it when he's thinking he should have won it. Mm-hmm. Who won it? What players? Was it Lidstrom?
Lidstrom, yeah.
Okay, well, there's no argument there. Mm-hmm. Even though Chris is a great defenseman, but you didn't lose to a one-off. You know, my years it was, you know, Chelly, Borky, myself, you know, Potvin had passed, you know, Rod Langway won it a year, Carlisle won it a year. Dougie Wilson won it once, but it was like me and Bork and Chelly and Leachy came in, mm-hmm. another great defenseman. It was always the same. And, you know, nobody was that much better than anybody that they could win it every year like Bobby Orr did. Or, you know, Nick had a great run. I think he's got seven Norris trophies or whatever the heck it is. But there's too many good players out there. And Makar, like, yes, he's going to be in the running every year, but will he be good enough to win it every year? Well, the other guys aren't going away either. Hedman's not going away, but that's, you know, you had Carlson for that 1 year, but, you know, Doughty, great defenseman. There's some good young ones now, but you got to put it all together.
What do you think would have happened if you guys would have had to stop in Vegas for a road trip back in the day?
Would have been good.
Big smile on
your face.
Would
have been good, yeah. Would have been good. Would have been fun. Would have been fun. What a city. I mean, you know what I'm unbelievably impressed with? I had a great conversation with George McPhee the other day. Just how...
George was on the show.
Was he?
Yeah.
Geez, you got everybody.
Yeah.
All the stars. And prior to coming on the air, having a conversation with you, with how you like, just how nice the people are. Mm-hmm. You would think, Vegas being Vegas, it'd just be hustle, bustle. But no, the locals are fantastic. And George was... For a city with 2.5 million people or 2.3, whatever, it's just blown away how nice everybody is.
So Gretz is playing golf with Coop and Payton.
Sean Payton and...
And you're stuck with me? Like,
yeah.
Is that what...
Well, no, because I could have went, but I knew that you needed me.
I do need you.
Just when you needed me. So I stayed. Why wouldn't I?
That's really nice of you.
No, for sure. I could play golf with Wade anytime. I can't do this anytime because you probably had a few cancellations and I got in.
I was worried that you were going to cancel on me.
If I knew it was you, I probably wouldn't be here. Kidding. This is great.
What do you think of Wayne's TV stuff?
You know what? I haven't, being in Canada,
oh,
we don't get it.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you what, you know, prior to his first show, you know, people, the pastor was, oh, he's crazy doing this. How do you think he'll do? I said, he'll do great.
Gus didn't want him to do it?
No, no, I'm just talking about people in general. He's crazy. Yeah. How we do? I said, he'll do great. Because everything Wayne does, he does well. He'll figure it out. I mean, it's nice to have, I mean, the host is great. You know, this and that is, you know, if you can't work beside him or, you know, it keeps it pretty loose on talk, has a good time. And Carter, and yeah, it's just a good thing. I mean, Wayne's not a, how do I say it? Like, he wouldn't be a Barkley out there or anything like that. But, I mean, the knowledge the guy's got of the game and the stories and just how, he's right where he should be.
Did you think somebody was going to make a run at his goals record?
No. He never even thought about it. Mm. You know, if Alex stays healthy, I mean, he's going to get it and then some. But here's the other thing. When you think of Wayne Gretzky, do you think of him as a goal scorer?
No.
I don't.
No.
No, he's a playmaker. Like, how the heck he even got 800 goals? But the little, you know, he didn't have a very good shot. Could pick a corner like nobody else, but not a Ovechkin shot. But no, not in my wildest dreams that I think anybody would touch any of his records.
I watched a power play from the Canada Cup the other day. It just ended up on Instagram. And Wayne was behind the net doing this thing. And all I could think of was the Michigan move or the Zegras play. But, that wasn't around. But I thought, what if that was around? What would his deadliness been like?
Well, I used his white Titan a couple of times in Edmonton during practice.
Yeah.
And I remember coming off, looking at him and saying, you're a better player than I thought you were. To be able to use this thing, it was a flipping log. I mean, there's no way he could do that in Michigan, whatever, with that stick. But, you know, he probably could have.
Yeah.
I mean, we didn't work on any of that stuff. You did stuff like that. You know where you ended up?
Where?
On the bench.
Slats would bench you?
Everybody, the league. You just don't do that. So we had a game in Pittsburgh once, and Phil Bourque, great guy. Bourque went in on a breakaway and put his stick, you know, upside down and did that thing with the puck. Go back to the bench. Mario looked him right in the eye and said, we don't do that here. That's it.
Wow.
Well, the game wasn't like that.
Right.
No disrespect to these kids. It's phenomenal. It's great to watch. But that was disrespectful back then.
One of my biggest regrets is not being able to find a coffee 50-30 Featherlight.
Well, they're anymore. Everywhere.
Really?
They don't sell them. They sell them now as a PP or something, 77.
I love the coffee Featherlight 50-30.
Yeah, everybody liked them because you get the top corner with them with that great, great, great curve. That was good.
You're the best.
Oh, I don't know about that. Tied for first maybe, but not the best. Actually, Bobby Orr, I love Bobby Orr to death.
Yeah.
I went... comes once a year and he plays at the golf course I play up north on his way to...
Where's the golf course?
In Foots Bay. It's called Open Bird up on Lake Joe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love that place.
On his way to... You never been there.
Open Bird?
Jeez, I
played there once with Thiss and... what's his name from Red Rider was there? Tom Cochran was there.
Tommy's a member, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so Bobby, I always go out, find him on the course, say hi to him. He's with the owner of the Sox and a couple of buddies. And he's like, you're the best. I look him right in the eye and say, well, if it wasn't for you, maybe I would have been. Oh, Bobby's awesome.
Go to your next gig, right, whatever buddy. You got to go do.
Be good.
One of the best of all time, Paul Coffey, and such a cool guy. And he's been like that since the very first time that I met him. Just a calm, casual, cool cat that treats everybody with respect. We go from that to Gary Lawless, former reporter with the Winnipeg Free Press, TSN in Canada. Now works for the Vegas Golden Knights, and you'll see him from time to time on with me on the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast. Hi, Gary. How are you today?
I'm fantastic.
You?
I just actually had a really cool experience.
What did you do?
My daughter is playing in the Street Fest tournament, mm-hmm. and she just scored the winner in a game, and she's kind of new to hockey and is playing on a team this year. She hasn't scored on the ice. But she just sniped one shelf.
Did she celebrate?
No, she was so shocked. She didn't really realize what had just happened. And I'm like, I'm halfway in tears. I was so happy for her. And then I think they changed. And she was going to hop over the boards. And I think she realized what happened. And she looked across. I was standing on the boards watching her. And she looked over at me. And the smile on her face was fantastic. So that's why we love hockey, right? To have those great moments, and I just got to have one with my daughter. Pretty cool.
I'm going to work on the celebration, though.
Uncle Darren.
It's all the celebration.
You might be the worst uncle.
It's the best. The celebration is the best.
Of uncledom.
Really? Uncledom?
Yes.
I like that.
No problem.
I'm a terrible influence on the youth of today, which is bad when I have a couple of kids of my own. Who's the best team in the National Hockey League?
Ooh. You have to. The best team I've seen this year is the Florida Panthers. And there's not much to pick between them and Carolina. I haven't seen Colorado yet. Not healthy. So I'll wait and see what they look like. And Pete DeBoer said, in his availability this weekend, that Jack Eichel may be cleared for contact this week. And once he's cleared for contact, I would imagine, it's a matter of a week to 10 days before he's actually cleared to play in a game, if everything goes well. And I want to see what Vegas looks like with Jack Eichel in the lineup.
So you mentioned Florida, Carolina, Colorado, yep. And Vegas.
Yeah.
What's wrong with Tampa?
They're very good, and they have the best player in the world, Andrei Vasilevskiy. And he can blow your candles out in a series all by himself. What like the last four or five series that they've won, playoff series that they've won, he's had a shutout in each of those series.
And the clinching game too.
Yeah, like that just is when the money's on the line, he's like, okay, I'm gonna win. It's like Patrick Waugh in '93. Mike Keane is a friend of mine. He was on that team, and Patrick would literally tell them during games, just get me one. And or they'd get a lead and they'd be after the second period, he would just say, nothing else is going in, so mm-hmm. Do what you need to do. And Vasilevskiy is in that zone for a much longer period, really. You know what I mean? When you think of how long he's been at that height. Now, Watt did it first. Had a massive, incredibly successful career. But this pinnacle, this peak that we're seeing Vasilevskiy at, the goaltending has changed so much. So, he's the where when Hasek was crazy Hasek, he's right there.
He's the goalie you take for a game seven right now.
He's the player I would take if I was starting a franchise. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't even blink. If tomorrow I get to go to the podium and pick first, Vasilevskiy.
Not McDavid?
No.
Not Hedman?
No.
Not Kucherov? Not
no.
Makar?
No.
Not Draisaitl?
No. He's better than all those guys.
Mm. More influential.
Okay. But that's another way of saying better.
Can influence a game more.
Better way of saying that's another way of saying better. More impactful, more influential, more better.
Who's the best skater in the game?
Makar or McDavid, I think.
I didn't intend to go down this road, but
yeah.
let's do it.
Sure, Makar or McDavid. They're a little bit different, and Makar is a better backward skater than McDavid. So, that's skating too. Half the game is played that way. I do think you have to differentiate. Who's the best skating defenseman? Cale Makar. Who's the best skating forward? Connor McDavid.
No, but who's if you're picking a team for one game, and you have to pick a skater?
Well, they're different, Darren. That question's specious because they're different positions. They do different things.
Or do you take Ovi?
Well, that's not for skating. I take him for
no,
other
skater,
reasons.
Like skater. I'm talking.
Oh, skater.
Skater.
Yeah. Cale Makar for me.
Really? Still?
Yeah.
You didn't even change your answer.
No, he's fantastic. He's a really good player. A really good player.
I like Cale, but I don't know a lot of people who are giving me that answer.
I see things a little bit differently than a lot of people. It is like at some point in time, you are what the numbers say you are. Mm-hmm. And winning playoff series is all part of that. And Makar is young and already is in a position Now, they were very close last year, lost to a really good Vegas team. And he, you know, I'm sure that there were lessons learned from him, for him. He's the best player there. He's the best player on his own team. He's better. I take him before Nathan MacKinnon. And Mike McDavid, yeah, wow. Look at those numbers. Look
or
at
Matthews.
Look at those plays. I love Austin Matthews, too, but didn't like the way they lost to Montreal last year.
It doesn't sound like you like him a lot.
No, I do. He's fantastic. Great shot. Great skater. Has added the slap shot to his arsenal. He's big. Got a great personality. He's calm. Like, he's going to... It won't surprise me if I don't love the roster construction in Toronto. And I guess that's not really fair. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it's not Connor McDavid's fault that the roster construction in Edmonton is lousy. It's not Austin Matthews' fault that the roster construction in Toronto is flawed. It's not Cale Makar's. It's not his. It's no benefit from him that the roster construction in Colorado is better than those two places.
Boy, you're really popular with the GMs right now in Toronto and Edmonton.
Well, I think that the GM in Edmonton inherited what he has right now. I don't put very much of it on him. He took a tough job and got, you know, what did he sign? A 5-year deal at $5 million a year? There's a reason that job came with such a heavy price tag and such term, because it's a really hard job. And, you know, Dubas in Toronto, like, there's been a couple of moves there.
Double down on forward depth. Who's the most interesting player in the National Hockey League? If you combine skill, talent, personality, story.
Trevor Zegras.
Oh, yeah?
Well, he's got half the guys over 50 in the hockey planet hate him.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe more. Every little kid in the hockey planet wants to be him. My daughter was just blown away. She was at the skills. She saw that, and she was just like asking me a million questions about Trevor Zegras. I don't know how to grow the game. I don't know. And there is this argument out there that it's growing the game the wrong way. I don't know how to. I'm not smart enough, and I don't know enough about branding and marketing, and then the psychology of, you know, what is the right thing for hockey. So I can't tell you that, but what I can tell you is...
Between YouTube clicks and Instagram clicks on an individual versus a team game.
Yeah, young people, well, that's a great way of putting it, right? You know what I mean? Like, and, you know, some people say it's the, it's adding individuality to hockey in a negative way.
Yeah.
You know, and we'll find out. Like, will Trevor Zegras ever win a Stanley Cup? I don't know. Like, it's... Mark Messier told me the other night that after Wayne Gretzky left, after all these lessons of team that he had learned on his way to winning the first four Stanley Cups that they all won together in Edmonton, he forgot them all when they played the Kings in the playoffs the year after Gretzky got traded, and he tried to do everything by himself. His shifts were too long. He, you know, didn't play his position the way he should have. And, you know, it reinforced.
LA won that series.
Yeah, and it reinforced, you know, he then went back to that foundations that the name of his book is No One Wins Alone. And that's the... That lesson was reinforced to him in that series. So does Trevor Zegras, is he going to make people around him better? You know, I bet Dallas Eakins would probably tell us he is for sure. But a lot of people on the outside, they don't see it that way. And there's a serious amount of hate out there for the game.
Hate's a strong word.
That Trevor Zegras plays. No, it's not.
Hate's too strong for people.
I didn't say they hate Trevor Zegras. They hate the game and the maneuvers. Like, John Tortorella, you're telling me he doesn't hate what Trevor Zegras is representing right now? 100% he does. He's not, he hasn't hidden that. He hasn't been shy about that.
You can dislike something without hating it.
Maybe you can.
What would be the name of your book? It Was All Me?
I Hate Darren Millard.
That's too long of a title.
I Hate Mallard.
Yeah, that's better.
No, I don't know what my book would be. I'll tell you what. I am a work in progress still, and I hope I always am. A guy who's become a really good friend of mine, Craig Heisinger, the assistant general manager of the Winnipeg Jets, said to me one time, a leopard doesn't change his spots. And I hated that expression. And
why?
Because I think people can change. I hope people can change.
Oh, I just thought you had something against leopards.
No, I love leopards. They're fast. They're sleek. Mm. So, you know, work in progress. I think that's kind of how I feel about myself as a broadcaster, as a writer, as a friend, as a father, as a husband, all that stuff.
Who's the most disappointing team in the National Hockey League this year?
The Winnipeg Jets are pretty disappointing. They're not done yet. We'll find out about the Oilers, right? Like, are they going to... You think they're going to make the playoffs, don't you?
Yep.
Yeah. We'll see. There are a lot of teams that you would have thought were... I would go with Winnipeg probably. I thought, you know... I never believed this. They're the most talented team in Canada. Toronto is, by a long shot. Toronto's loaded in many ways. And look how good how great they've played. Yeah, Winnipeg, I guess, would be the most disappointing. Like in the East, like the playoff picture's already assembled over there. But there's no one that's out of the playoffs.
Islanders.
Yeah, Philadelphia and the Islanders, I guess, you know, are. The Islanders, they'll be good again next year. The way they play and how the dedication required to play that style all the time. Yeah, I think you need a breather.
Do you think that was about the building, like the long road trip and running out of gas?
Yeah,
and then
sure, that didn't help.
All that built up, and they just hit that big flat spot.
Yeah,
because it's bizarre that a team can be that good, that consistent with that identity, and just lose it for 2 months.
Well, then the other thing that we forget, right, and you and I forget it because we're in Vegas, and the Golden Knights, who have, the last time I checked, they were second in man games lost in the National Hockey League.
To Montreal?
Yeah. They didn't let it bother them. Like, I guess maybe they have. Maybe they'd have 65 points instead of 55 if they had been healthy. They'd be up there with Colorado and Florida and Carolina. In Tampa, those teams, they'd have that many wins and that many points, but they're still in it. The Islanders, they've had adversity and haven't been fortunate enough to rise above it the way the Golden Knights have.
What about Seattle?
Well, Seattle, I don't think after the expansion draft, I was like, okay, they're not very good, so they weren't. I mean, like, had a conversation with Norm McIver the other night in the press box in Vegas, and you know, he said we were open to going certain ways, and pretty quickly we realized that people weren't gonna play ball with us the way they did with Vegas, so we were gonna have to, you know, get players and keep cap space.
They could have drafted differently though.
They could have, but like, you know, to be better, they were going to have to take really big money contracts. The problem is with them was that they all had so much term. Like Carey Price has got 4 more years at 10.5.
Yeah.
That's a tough one to sell your owners on. We're going to get this guy. And then he wasn't going to play. Like, they knew that he had to have surgery. So, yeah, what they do with their cap space, the problem with their cap space is, the stuff they have this year, it's perishable. So they better be really active at the deadline. Like, the we'll take your cap money for assets, that for sale sign, Ron Francis better have that on the front line. Now, you got to have an owner that's willing to do that, is willing to say, you say, we're not going to make the playoffs, and our payroll is going to, we're going to cap out. We know we're not going to make the playoffs right now, and maybe even above. Maybe we're going to take somebody's LTIR. Like, who knows what they will do in the next little while, but you have to take advantage. You have an asset right now, and that's cap space. You got to monetize it. You got to profit from it. And then this, on July 1 this year, they're going to, you know, if they do things right, they'll have a bunch of cap space then. They could be a lot better next year than they were this year.
Dark horse. Give me a dark horse before we wrap this up.
Well, Vegas has got to be the dark horse right
Vegas
now, right?
Vegas is not a dark horse.
No one really listen to NHL Network. Nobody expects them to do anything right now. All everyone talks about is Colorado in the West. They say Vegas is going to win the Pacific, and that's all you ever hear from anyone. And then it
sounds like you take this personally.
No, I just listened. Okay. You asked me a question, and I'm giving you the reason why.
I just don't think Vegas is a dark horse.
Okay, all right. But Edmonton, you know, could Edmonton get a goalie and beat somebody? For sure. Be interesting to see what Pittsburgh does.
Yeah.
Like Sidney Crosby, you know, can he crank it up for one more run at the Stanley Cup with the people around him?
Because they're not adding.
I don't think so.
Burke's, you know, already said that.
Well, he's not the general manager. Ron Hextall will decide what they're going to do, and Ron doesn't tell anybody what he's going to do. So I'll hit pause on that until we see what Hexy is, what he gets up to. Washington, if Washington adds a goalie, they could change their situation.
I think you misunderstood the question. I said dark horse, and you've mentioned Ovi's team, McDavid's team, and Sidney Crosby's team, and the team that's adding Jack Eichel.
Every team in the playoffs, every team in the playoffs in the East can win the Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm.
So there's no dark horse over there. So I'm picking the...
People wonder why we don't get along, and this is why we don't get along.
Well, you ask bad questions, and I try and
give
a great answer.
No, because you come up with these front-running answers to a dark horse question.
Is Calgary a dark horse? Is Minnesota a dark horse?
I would say St. Louis would be a dark horse to me.
They won the Stanley Cup 3 years ago. They're built to win. If there was a parade in Missouri again this summer, that wouldn't surprise me. That wouldn't blow. It wouldn't knock me off my stool.
No Anaheim's chance. A dark horse.
Yeah. To win the Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. That would really, really drive some people nuts if Trevor Zegras scored the winner in Game 7.
Oh, on a Michigan move.
Flip it up to Sonny Milano and have Sonny Milano bang it in for Stanley. People, people would quit.
I think you...
Presidents in the National Hockey League and people would walk out in protest.
Like worse than Brett Hull foot in the crease? More uproar?
Right around there. The problem with the Brett Hull foot in the crease is that, like, it was huge uproar in Canada because the Stanley Cup is always a big, like, what happens there is big in Canada. But Buffalo's not it's a great market in the fact that they're so loyal and dedicated, but it's not if a tree falls in the forest, does it really fall? If a guy has the Sabres lose the Stanley Cup, did it really happen?
Is this a big thrill for you to be on the Chirp?
It is in the sense that, you
like
know,
an accomplishment, like one of those things that you put
well,
up there.
Well, no,
go,
just like I kind of thought that you decided you were never going to have me on because, you know, your desk is three desks away from me. You've had just about, and really, you didn't invite me here. Bob did.
No, Bob and I have talked about it, but we had to do it in person. We weren't going to do it over Zoom when your desk is three spots away from
me.
See.
So you're telling me that this was planned out, that this weekend I would guest on this show.
Ask him. I won't even.
He sent me a text last night at like 9 o'clock. We were into the third bottle of Chianti. And when I got the request,
well, we have been talking about this.
It was plotted out.
Yes, we have been talking about this.
Oh, that's rich.
We did. had we not talked about Lawless being on the program this week? Yes, we did.
Why are you going to the research department? Why are you making Bob do your work for you?
Well, I can tell you why you got the text at 9 o'clock last night.
Why is that?
And it had nothing to do with his broken toe.
Someone canceled?
No. He was on a runner.
All right.
Let me tell you this. There's a lot of people looking forward to getting home because Vegas has run them out of the building and they're just exhausted. That man, producer Bob, has had a run this weekend.
He's going home with a Fred Flintstone,
yes,
throbbing pinky toe.
Yeah, pinky toe.
And he's got
some cash in his pocket.
He's had to like get rid of the rubber band,
yep,
that he usually uses for his roll, mm-hmm, and had to get some butcher string, some twine to tie it tight.
Seriously, this has to be a thrill for you.
Okay. How can it be a thrill? Like, honestly.
Did you see I have my own sign and everything?
Hey, you're big time.
Yeah.
Without question, you know. You are. You're big league. I'm going to quote you. And now, next up is Gary Lawless. He used to be the fine sports columnist at the Winnipeg Free Press. And now he's slinging webbies for the Vegas Golden Knights.
Every time you tell that story, you change it.
Slinging.
Tweets, wasn't it?
Web something. Web articles. Slinging was there's a connotation.
You know what I find?
To the verb sling.
I bring people on this podcast, and they never want to say goodbye. They never want to be quiet. Like, we had
Bob,
the same thing happen with Chris King the other day, and Bill Daly, and Paul Coffey today. Yeah. Nobody ever wants to say goodbye.
Well, I don't think I should be included in that company. That's pretty rare air right there. Paul, mm-hmm, Coffey, Hall of Famer. Bill Daly, Deputy Commissioner. And Chris King, one of the best Peterborough Petes, mm-hmm, ever to play.
It's no Bob Atwell. Broke my heart one day.
Didn't break mine.
Look that
it's
one
one
up.
Of the best days of my life. Look it up.
I really wish.
Who got the primary assist?
I really wish we had more time for
who
this.
Who got the primary assist?
But I got to get a
Terry
water.
Terry Bovair.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know that. The only reason I know Bob Atwell is because he broke my heart in 1979 Memorial Cup. Again, I got to run. My free parking's almost up. We got to go.
Thanks, Bob.
Okay, there's Gary Lawless, VGK insider, who I work with in the Vegas Golden Knights broadcast, and always fun. We do have a good relationship. It just happens behind the scenes. Smash that like button. Hammer it home. Share it. If you want good banter, you want a lot of fun, this is where you come to. But we need your help in spreading the word to the Chirp with Darren Millard. On location this week at the NHL All-Star Game. Appreciate everybody chipping in with that. And again, I hope you enjoyed it. And make sure that you share. It's really easy. Forward, share, and we'll make this a movement. On behalf of producer Bob, I'm Darren Millard. We'll talk to you next time on The Chirp with Darren Millard.